Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, it's been a long road. I don't know where it's gonna take me. All I got faith, my fam, my loved ones, my block, my people. Sort of, it's a struggle. You just gotta keep up, keep rocking, keep your eyes on the prize. The other foot in front of you. Never know when life will take you, man. Ride with me.
Back in the 70s, there just a boulder. A little earlier, my grandma raised a daughter. A beautiful thing, she was a ghetto flower. Caught a young man's attention with her power. It was love at first sight, I saw she thought. But a couple months later, he left her with a broken heart. Young and naive, only 17. About to have a young mouth to feed. Head down, she could feel the shame. A couple months later, labor pains. She looked down in her new son's eyes. A black smile, as big as the skies. Pops gave her being a man a try. Worked as a mechanic, mama up at Burger King. Meanwhile, late at night, she was studying. She did a thing and she got a degree.
All in one lifetime, it's just all in one lifetime.
All in my ups.
All in one lifetime, it's just all in one lifetime.
All in my ups.
All in one lifetime, it's just all in one lifetime.
All in my ups.
All in one lifetime, it's just all in one lifetime.
All in my ups.
Flash to the future, now I'm 14. And my pops up and left the scene. Now I'm a young kid, walking the block. And no white man, no, my mama's a cop. They show me no love, a young man locked in handcuffs. Mama always worked in the streets to raise us. Here's a twist, my uncle white as snow. And he's always telling me the right way to go. Until one day the cops took him to, yo. Imagine the pain, conflicted inside. Not knowing whether I wanna ride or die. I get down on my knees and I'm screaming why. I hit the streets like a soldier boy. Running a jacket, clapping an accent. No bad things better happen. But one night I slept and had a dream. My uncle told me to relax.
Yo ho ho. Welcome to the Diamond on the Rough Show with Kelly Alejandro and Mountain Man.
Hey, all. How's it going? How's it hanging? Christmas shopping, hanging out, running around, doing crazy stuff, getting ready for the family. Yeah, exciting. What are you up to, Mountain Man?
How are you on this wishful Wednesday?
Oh, I'm doing great. I just wish the paint would dry on my bathroom wall so I could finish. But no, actually, it's been a great day. Yeah, no, really. Oh, my gosh. Isn't it funny how when you're trying to straighten out your life, you make a bigger mess before it actually looks organized?
Uh-huh, and I hear that 100%.
Though.
Well, I know I wish for a white Christmas, and lo and behold, I think it is going to be a white Christmas this year.
Are you serious? Did they say if it was going to snow or not?
Well, what do we have on the ground, Charlie?
True, but see, I'm glad you brought this up. My son and I have this debate every year. Alex loves snow, which is kind of funny because he was in Florida for 3 years. But he says that if it doesn't actually snow on Christmas, it's not a white Christmas, even if you have tons of snow already on the ground.
Yeah,
what do you
but
think
I look
about
at it
that?
This way, too.
Mm-hmm.
I look at it as a whatever God brings us, we should be thankful
right.
for whatever it is. Whatever you wish for, you should be thankful for that you've got it.
I totally agree with you. And that's why I think it's funny that we're like, oh, I want a white Christmas, but then we're complaining about it afterwards. Because, you know, they're like, well, now it's dirty and we got to shovel it. You know, you
yeah,
can't move it
but
both
it's
ways.
Dirty. But look at those parts that are not even touched.
Hey,
think
you're
about
preaching to the choir. I love snow. It's beautiful.
Well, I'm not just preaching to the choir. Because I'm preaching
I don't have to
those
shovel it. I got boys for that.
Yeah, but I'm praying for those who don't even have to shovel, who can just look out their windows, and if they're in front of a field or something,
mm-hmm.
and they can see a nice field of white snow.
Well, I have to tell you, Sunday when it was snowing, my bed actually overlooks a window, and I just had the window open, and I was laying in bed, and it was so beautiful looking at the snow falling, and I don't know, it's just something magical about it. I just love the snow. I love it at Christmas time. And I have to say, I've actually been in warmer climates during Christmas for a couple of years. I was in Costa Rica on Christmas. We were on vacation. And I actually spent a week before Christmas in Florida. Not the same, Santa Claus in shorts and Bermuda shirt, it just doesn't do it to me. And the palm trees with the Christmas lights, not the same.
No, it's not. And I can contest to that because you take this winter.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Christmas is only a couple days away, and we've
Yay,
got snow
Christmas!
On the...
Sorry, I get excited about Christmas. I swear to goodness, I revert back to like a 2-year-old waiting for Santa Claus.
But you think about it. This year, we have snow on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it will snow on Christmas or Christmas Eve, because I don't know. I haven't seen the weather, but I'm just thankful that we have snow on the ground,
mm-hmm.
that we can have a white Christmas this year. Because if
it
you think
beautiful.
About it, did we have snow last year?
Okay, see, now this is where the Alzheimer's kicks in, because I can't even remember what I had for dinner yesterday, and you're asking me about last year. No, I think we did. I'm trying to remember.
Because I can't
Isn't
even
that horrible?
Remember.
I can't remember. Maybe one of our listeners can tell us if we had snow last year.
Yes, and I hope that they will. And I want to say hello to all the listeners out there, as they are out there. And
you know, it's funny. I have to tell you, Wishful Wednesday, one of the things that I'm wishing for this Christmas is for everybody to have just a place to call home. I know it's sad. I was just online watching the thing that they have. PayPal does a special every year, a home for the holidays. And you can relate to this, and I can too, because I was adopted and you were in foster care, that we take that for granted, that there's people out there that don't have a home, that they don't have parents, they don't have a family of their own, and we're so blessed to have one. Even like my family, yeah, we're dysfunctional, we aren't perfect, so we get on each other's nerves, but we love each other, and that's what's so important. And family isn't about blood either. It's just about who happens to have... I tell my kids, it's not about who grew in your tummy, it's about who grew in your heart. And that's such
exactly.
an important thing this time of year, because I can't imagine not having my family around.
Yeah, and I want to hold up one particular part of your family, because she did such an awesome, awesome job on Monday.
Thank you. She was so scared. She's like, I cannot believe you didn't tell me you wanted me to sing. And it's funny because she says, like, she knows tons of songs. And she says, the minute you said sing, they all went out the window. I didn't want you stressing it out. I figured, you know, just a couple of bars. It didn't have to be anything fancy.
She did an awesome job, and I just really have to hold her up because she really did. She really
sweetie.
Did.
I am so proud of her. That's one of the things that I missed the most about when she went off to college was that every day she would sing in the shower, and the bathroom's in my room, and I just used to love listening to her sing. And when she's not home, it's like, no, you know, so when she's home, she's
Where
really,
is she?
It's so awesome.
Now, here's my question, and this has a question to do with the switchboard and everything.
Yes.
Are you even up in the chat room and stuff?
My chat room is going around in circles loading.
Okay, because I'm wondering myself, and I know I don't like to talk about it on the air, but I
That's
just have
okay.
To...
For our listeners, if you guys are trying to get into the chat room, I do apologize. I don't know what's going on. It just keeps going around in circles. So I will keep trying to get it up, but you can still listen to us. You don't have to be in the chat room to listen to the show. So just, be a little patient. I don't know. It's wicked slow. Maybe because of the holidays, people are doing last minute shopping on the internet.
I don't know either because I've got it up and I've got it showing. I've clicked the co-host and it shows that I'm the only one in there right now.
I guess it's just you holding down the chat room, Mountain Man, because like I said, I'm going around in circles as usual.
Not only that, but I want you to take a minute and do your spiel there. Anyhow,
absolutely.
I will.
The
best job at it.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. For our listeners, if you want to call in, tonight's guest is going to be Stephen Wright. He's an amazing young man. This young man is a college student. He's been a friend of our family for years. He actually had the opportunity to go to the president's ball for the Obama inaugural. And
wow.
I thought that was amazing. Yeah, I know. I was so jealous. So he'll be on the show, and I also have his partner in crime, Christopher Arihita Alejandro. He's another one of our clan, and he is an aspiring screenwriter and director. We're going to have him on the show, talk a little bit about what they're planning and what they're looking for in their future and stuff. So it's going to be an interesting show. If you want to call in, the number is 347-989-1473. That's 347-989-1473. Or you can go to our webpage, www.blogtalkradio.com/ordinary woman, and woman is spelled W-M-N. Again, if you can't get into the chat room because it's a little slow right now, don't worry about it. You can still get in and listen to the show. And as soon as the chat room's up, I will let you know. The other thing, too, is if you have Skype, you can call us in through Skype. Ordinary Woman is the tagline. I'll make sure I put that up. I haven't done that yet, Mountain Man. I have to get better at
Come
doing
on,
that.
Come on. What is
have...
with you today?
Hey, back up. I've been painting all day.
I know.
No, I'm so excited. It's just like, oh, my God. I'm like a little kid. I'm so psyched for Christmas. Family's coming over tomorrow. We're going to get to hang out, do our family traditions. I'd like to talk to a little bit about that after we get done with the boys, just some of the family traditions and stuff. I think it'll be nice to...
I was hoping to chat with you after the whole entire show. Anyways, about that whole scenario. And if you can do me a favor, and in the other window, just throw some info up. So I can be looking for that in our switchboard area here.
I will once the chat room decides to show up, because it's not.
Not that one.
I have to tell you, though, I am real excited. Remember how we asked people to send us their 8x10 so we can put them up on the Hall of Fame?
Yes.
I actually got one today. I am so excited.
Oh, that is awesome. Who did we get?
David Garfield. He's the director, producer, and actor of the movie The Suitcase, which is a great movie. It's kind of in the style of the old Outer Limits, Twilight Zone type genre. And I knew David was going to be the first. So I'm kind of psyched. David, if you're listening, you're going to be the first one up on our Wall of Fame. I'm so psyched. I'm looking at your smiley face, and he autographed it for me. I'm just, like, so excited. I'm like, this is awesome. So, yeah, that made my day. We got that in there. And I actually had a few people hit me up that they're going to send it to me. So I'm psyched.
I've seen everything everybody hit you up to, because everything you sent out, I could see replies back to. So everyone that has replied back, thank you, because
absolutely.
I could see them as well. And I also am going to talk to the host and see if we can get a picture of ourselves.
That would be a cool thing.
Together, so we can put it up on the wall, because
absolutely.
We both actually had have been on the show together since the basic start time. And anyhow, well, I don't want to hold this person up, because we do have a caller here. And
so
I
you
don't
go ahead
hold...
and patch him through, because I can't see diddly squat. I don't even have the switchboard anymore.
Well, I've got everything, so...
I'm in the dark, totally in the dark. I'm looking at a black screen right now. Oh, my goodness.
Oh,
so funny.
No. Good evening. You're on the Diamond on the Rough show. Who's this, please?
Chris Rarahita.
Chris, how are you?
Hey, I'm good.
How's it going?
What's going on, man?
I'm doing good. Just called in. First time.
That's awesome.
Welcome.
I was just telling our listeners a little bit about you and about your aspirations, so we'll get going. Where's your partner in crime? Is he going to be calling in, too?
Yeah, he should be calling in soon.
Is he going to
start with you? Yes, he has the number. So what I'll do is I'll start with you, and then when he comes in, we'll patch him through. So, Chris, I was telling our listeners that you're an aspiring screenwriter and director. What got you interested in that field, and what inspires you?
Mainly what really got me into it was I used to have a paper out. And while I was doing it, I had this story in my head that I was creating, and I decided to write it down. And then when I went to go write it down, I said, this would be a cool movie. So I wrote a script, and that's where it started. And from there, ever since, I've been writing stories and doing, like, goofy films with friends and stuff.
That's awesome. Now, how old were you when that first story came to be?
And I think we have his partner on as well.
I believe I was 12.
Wow, that's amazing. You wrote your first story at 12. Did you write it as a story or as a screenplay?
A screenplay. It was handwritten, and it was about 60 pages, if that.
60 pages. Oh, my goodness. 12 years old, I was lucky if I could write my homework, and that was one page. So I have to ask you, I know, because most our listeners are going to be saying, okay, you have this 12-year-old, he wrote this script, and I vouch for the fact that it was not bad. I mean, I was really surprised when I got to read it, and I remember Chris saying to me, can you read this for me? And I'm like, okay, whatever. And I read it, and I'm like, wow. And the visuals what was got me that you had a lot of visuals as far as the type of movie. Now, what kind of screenplays are you mostly drawn to writing?
Usually dramas. Right now, I've recently started comedies.
Wow. We could turn the, if somebody's got the show turned up in the background, if we could have that turned down. And I've got that other caller, so let me patch him through.
Okay. So for our listeners, if you're interested in calling, the number is 347-989-1473, or you can go to our website, www.blogtalkradio.com/ordinary woman, and woman is spelled W-M-N. Also, if you happen to be on the road and you're not near a computer, you can obviously listen to the show on your phone, 347-989-1473, and you can patch through and listen to the show, or you can be patched through the switchboard and come on board. And, oh, my chat room is up. I'm so excited. See, the little things in life excite me.
And we have all the people on.
So, Stephen, are you on?
Hello, Brohim.
Hi, Stephen. How are you? To our listeners, this is Stephen Wright. Now, Stephen, I have to ask you, you actually originally, you are going to school for what? What is your college major?
Electrical engineering.
Electrical engineering. Now, isn't that something you got to be pretty smart for?
Sure. Or pretty dumb to go put yourself through that process.
Now, I have to ask, I mean, you're doing electrical engineering, yet you're still very involved in cinematography and video making and all this stuff because you and Chris have done a couple of projects. Can you tell our listeners how you got involved in that?
I got involved that from his passion and desire for it. He told you he started writing his stories way back when, and when we
mm-hmm.
first started hanging out and being friends, that just sort of rubbed off on me, and I took it to another level.
Mm-hmm.
So I've just been practicing, building up our skills, so when Chris is finally ready to hand me a script, we'll know what to do with it.
Now, I have to ask, though, so you are more of the cinematographer and Chris is the screenwriter-director. How does your partnership work?
And he's editor and, editor and cameraman pretty much, and then I write and tell him what I want to see.
I do the movie magic.
Yeah.
Now, is it true, Stephen, that editing is one of the hardest things to do?
Oh, yeah. Like, however long it filmed it, you got to go back and watch that again and times two of however you want to change it and mess
mm-hmm.
with it around. It's a tedious process, but I like it. It's fun, so I don't complain.
Now, Chris,
I do.
You, yeah, Chris doesn't like it at all. Trust me. I edited a play. Jeez, man. It was like a process. The play was back in March, and I just finally got it done. Now I got to find a DVD that holds it, but not an enviable task. I don't know how people have 24, 50, 180 hours of movie filmed, and then they have to cut it down to an hour and a half or 2 hours. I just can't even imagine having to do that. Now, Chris, one of the things that we, for our listeners, to get a little background, now what school did you go to? What kind of things did you do in high school? What were you involved in?
I went to Low Catholic for 4 years, and I was on the football team there for all 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I dabbled in other sports like basketball and baseball. I stuck with football
mm-hmm.
more. Senior
yeah.
year, we did drama for a little bit, but it kind of got in the way of my sports schedule, so I couldn't really stick with it as much.
Right.
And then I went to UNLV for a year to study film. And then
How was that experience for you there at UNLV, since it's such a major school?
It was good. It was good. Production class really taught me a lot to, you know, the lighting and how to set up a three-point light scheme and how important it is for camera angles, even if we were using a 8mm camera.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny because I have a friend of mine that filmed his whole movie in 8mm. And I mean, it's expensive. It was wicked expensive for them to do that, but that's how he wanted it. He wanted that effect. And it's amazing to me to be able to use that genre. Now, do you think that there's a huge difference between 8mm and what's being used now?
Oh, yeah, usually. Mainly more so on, like, taking care of the camera and also editing. Editing is a lot easier now with computers. You just upload it in the computer and you see it. Unlike back then, you had to look frame for frame at the film in a dark room and cut where you didn't, where you wanted to cut out, like legit cut with scissors, and then tape it back together and see if it worked. There's a lot more work put into it with the old school film editing as to now.
That's actually true, because that was one of the things that, when my friend was filming his movie, it literally was when he had to change the film. It's like we had to cover him with a blanket and all the lights had to be out, and in order for him to change the film without getting exposed, it was a tedious task. But that's the effect he wanted. Now, you said you went to UNLV for a year, and then what did you do?
I went to Miami-Dade for creative writing, and that was also a good experience. I liked it out there because the teacher really helped me how to develop my characters better and work on my dialogue, which is one of my, well, used to be one of my issues, but now I've gotten my dialogue up to my visuals, and now I feel real comfortable writing stories.
Okay, and where are you going to school now?
I'm at Salem State as a theater major, because I was told the best way to get into directing is if you're directing people for the stage rather than for a screen, because that's a lot easier. It's like, all right, say these three lines, you're done, get out of here. Unlike for stage where it's like, you got to talk, you know, they got to be prepared for a whole hour plus in front of a live audience.
That's actually very true. I know for me, when I started acting, that was the most scariest thing to have to do live theater, because there's no do-overs. Like you said, I mean, you make a mistake when you're making a movie.
You
got to
go through it, or have your partner feed you a line.
Oh, yeah, and it was crazy. I even saw it a couple of times where one of the actors messed up his lines, and because the other actress was so used to queuing off of him, it messed her up. So it was kind of like they both looked at each other like, what the hell just happened? Because they just had no clue what to do next.
Exactly. I have to comment on that one myself, because I've been into a couple of shows myself, and so I know how hard it is to even come up with a particular line. So
right.
I can agree with that.
So now, Stephen, you're going to school for, have you gone to school for any type of drama, acting, or filmmaking, or is that something that you self-taught yourself?
I self-taught myself. Besides that short little stay me and Chris had in high school, drama club, I didn't do anything. I just opened up my own YouTube channel, record my life, and I just practiced my skills, trying to make good videos over on that.
Now, I noticed that you guys, your element, you like to push the envelope. You don't do your basic cookie-cutter kind of humor. You don't do your basic type of shows. I mean, you push the envelope with the content and the language. What motivates you to do that, and what do you think that people will get out of it?
I think it's more of a shock factor. Sometimes if you throw something in someone's face, they don't expect it. And then if it's funny, they'll laugh because it was so shocking to see or hear.
Yeah, life's too short. Everyone needs to have a good sense of humor. I mean, it sucks if people get offended, but I don't get offended. Anyone could say anything to me, I'm not going to go home and cry about it. So.
Now, I have to ask you, a lot of people have said that some of the movies that are made nowadays are basically, like you said, shock factor. There's no talent in it. There's no real plot. It's just the fact that they shock you and throw the vulgar humor. Do you think that's true, or do you think that there's an art form in doing that?
With some, but I think, like, you know, a lot of Judd Apatow and anything written by Seth Rogen, like, they also have the shock, but they know how to make the story flow and connect together. So it's good comedy. And then you have
Michael Bay.
Who
blows
something up, and there is no story or plot connection.
Michael Bay is my man, because all he does is blow stuff up. And you're right. This is, from the moment you walk in, you get an explosion to the end. There's an explosion, and very rarely is there anything in between, yet he makes money. Why do you think that happens, that even though you have a story that really isn't that good, why is it still making money?
Visuals. People love to see amazing visuals. Like, you see, first time Transformers came out, we were blown away to how real Optimus Prime looked when he leaned against the screen and said, "Hi, I'm Optimus Prime."
Right.
And that's it. You know, people love action.
You don't really need to be that intelligent. You just sit back and it's like a roller coaster ride. You don't have to put too much thought process in it. People don't like to think that much at the movie theaters. They just want to see things blow up and big boobies from Megan Fox, you know, in your face.
Well, that's true. Everybody was saying that the best part of that movie was the first 5 minutes where Megan Fox is sitting on the motorcycle. Now, I have to ask you guys, you're obviously still college students, and you have a couple of years to go before graduation. What do you hope to bring to Hollywood that's different from what's already out there?
I don't know anything different, but I think I could bring something better than what's out there, or something more original. Like, I have some concept.
Mm-hmm.
What was that?
Some concept of what?
Like, I believe I have some concepts that haven't been done yet by tweaking older ones in a way. So it's not really original, but it's like a new taste of old stuff.
Now, do you think your movies are going to be more of a shock factor, or are you really trying to get the whole package where you'll have the shock factor with the plot and with the visuals as well?
I think it's everything. I try to get the whole package deal. Like, you know, if I'm sticking with a drama, and I'm not going to shock you in that. It's going to be straight to the point. There's a plot. There's going to be dialogue connecting everything. But comedy, that's when I do my shock factor and try to make people laugh in outrageous ways.
Now, Steven, I have to ask you, what was the first project that you and Christopher worked on together?
It was a skit we were doing for our English class, wasn't it? Was it, Chris?
It was for the monkey, right?
Yeah, we had a shady plot line where it was just a bunch of smoke pouring out of some beat-up truck, and the main character, Jet, had to go on a mission for some Twinkies because he had the munchies. So we just kind of guerrilla-style shot it, just went on some different locations, threw some humor in there with the monkey puppet. You know, how can you go wrong?
Right. Now, that monkey puppet has evolved to, you actually had him on YouTube with a couple of skits. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Yes, actually. I had him kidnap me, quote unquote, and he took over my show on YouTube, and I have him be the more outrageous character. Like, I have him swear more than me and pretty much try to tell me what to do on my own show.
Right.
He's so versatile. We have so much for him. And then I also got a puppet, so we said that it was his uncle that came from the jungle, and we're still developing their characters. We haven't put much work in them, but once we finally sit down and be serious with them, those can be some pretty funny characters.
Now, I have to ask you, do you ever get people that are offended by what you guys do, whether it pushes the boundaries of taste or it's not politically correct, and how do you deal with it?
Heck yeah, on my page, I've gotten bashed tons of times of people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'll mention something about the conflict in the Middle East between the Jewish culture and Hezbollah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll joke about it, saying it's the butter side up, butter side down conflict. The people who are Jewish or Muslim will get offended by me talking about that.
Now, do you find yourselves where you focus more on one particular, you just like talk about everybody in general?
I think so. Usually pop culture or what's big in the news at the time.
Now, Stephen, I have to ask you, actually for both of you, but Stephen, I'll ask you first. A lot of people say nowadays that the youth are really one-dimensional. They don't read as much. They're not as deep. They don't have as much of a grasp of press, you know, the past or the present or culture and current events. But that's not the case with you guys. You guys have tackled some pretty deep concepts where you talk about politics, you talk about the conflict in the Middle East. I mean, you even talked about breastfeeding and all these other things. Where do you think that comes from?
The knowledge is just out there for anyone to go and look. So I'm not lazy. I go on YouTube. I go online. I just find out as much as I can, and it's just my opinion on the things. You know, some people don't have an opinion to give. I'm open and willing to give my opinion, so I don't hold back.
Right. The difference between you, Stephen, is that you give your opinion, but you actually back it up with some facts. Is that a learned behavior? Did you get that from your parents? I mean, because, like I said, you actually present an intelligent argument. That doesn't mean we have to agree with you. And obviously, there's two sides to every issue, but you actually have these facts, and they're real facts. They're not something that you're pulling out of the air. You have the validity and the facts to go find it. How did you get to be such an inquisitive mind and so intellectual?
Because I don't like structure and rules, and I was always trying to break the rules. And if you're trying to break the rules, you need to know why you're right, you know, if you're trying to defend yourself. So I've always tried to look for loopholes, and I don't know. I just That's me. That's how my mind works.
Now, Chris, how about with you? Where do you think you got that inquisitive mind and your ability to be able to argue something as diverse as breastfeeding when you're a young man in your early 20s and obviously don't have any kids to actually present a valid point?
I went off on pretty much life experience. Like, I was breastfed, and I don't see a problem with it. And I know many of my siblings breastfeed, you know, and if some people are offended by it, you know, it's not like they're saying, hello, look at me, look what I'm doing. No, they're trying to do it discreetly. Most women put a blanket over the baby or a towel of some sort. And
right.
It's just that people are insecure with the body most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you guys think that we in the American society are just too sensitive to some issues at times?
Yeah, everyone is trying to be too politically correct.
Yeah, definitely.
Really, everything's okay to talk about or nothing. Then you start getting into, like, fascists, like, oh, no, can't go behind the red curtain. No.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think there's such a sensitivity to certain issues in this country?
Good question. I don't know why. Like, I'm not sensitive towards issues, but I've always been confused on why some people can be offended by certain things.
Right.
Just emotions, now, human emotions, hard thing to...
Right, emotions. Now, I have to ask you, because you guys are obviously geared towards the film industry and stuff, why do you think here in this country we have such a hang-up when it comes to nudity? Yes, it's all right to see, you know, somebody's head splattered all over the screen, and that's okay, but then if you, you know, see a woman breastfeeding on the screen, it's going to be censored, and there's going to be a big to-do about it.
Well, with that, I think it had to do with, because America has always been, like, behind the times of everywhere else in the world, if you notice, you know. It happened with race, you know, Eros, like in England, black and white people were getting along before it happened here.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, and then with sex is still an issue into the 70s and early 80s, where women were exposing themselves too much. So now, if you show even a little bit nudity, you're going to get slapped with NC-17, and you have to edit around or add shadows if they're in the editing booth to make it get that R rating.
Right. Now, talking about the ratings, this is something that you and I have actually discussed in the past. Why do you think the rating issue is so archaic, and what is the issue that you have with the way they do it?
It's the framework and groundwork they laid down. The first people to come up with the rules probably had Christian morals, the line of train of thinking, we know what's right, here's your standard and form. And then through bureaucracy, it's just a hard thing to change, you know? If you want the money, you want the funding to make these movies, you have to follow our rules that are already there. You know, like, a lot of people now don't even care. Like, because of the internet, you can go watch whatever you want. It's not really a big deal anymore, but they're still, like Chris said, behind the times.
Now, do you think that do you think there's a valid point where you would show nudity in a movie to actually be part of the plot line, or is that... Again, the shock factor thing that we're looking for.
I think some scenes are shock factor. As a matter of fact, last night I was watching Natural Born Killers, and there was a scene where Woody Harrelson is talking, and there's a flash of a woman washing her chest in a shower, and then it cuts back to Woody Harrelson talking. I had no idea why that was there. I was confused with the whole story, and I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if there's a love scene between two characters, it's okay to show it, not excessively. But if there's a love scene or... Let's say they're at Mardi Gras or something like that.
Yeah, I have to ask you, and this I've always found this funny, and I know some of my friends have had issue with this. You could turn on Channel 2 and watch a PBS documentary on females in the bush in Africa, and they're running around with their breasts exposed, and you know and it's fun. They don't see a problem with that. But then if you show a picture of a woman sunbathing topless, it's a total different concept, and it's banned. Why do you think there's the two differences?
Because I think the lady who's laying topless, her culture is that usually you're wearing clothes, unlike the lady who's in the bush who has nothing but loincloth.
But isn't it the same thing you're showing, though? It's still a woman breastless. I mean, a woman, excuse me, topless, showing her breasts. Yet, why is it that in a documentary setting it's okay, but in a feature film?
It may even be attractiveness, too. Like, oh, I'm attracted to the one on the beach. That's wrong. Cover her up.
Mm-hmm.
But the one in the bush, I'm not.
So it's just a cultural thing as far as how it's presented.
Yes.
Okay, for our guests, real quick, for our listeners, 347-989-1473. If you're interested in calling in, if you have any questions for Chris or Steven, Also, www.blogtalkradio.com/ordinary woman. Woman is spelled W-M-N. I apologize because the chat room is acting, excuse me, a little weird tonight. I have a couple of people that are trying to log on and they can't. I apologize. But if you have any questions for Chris or Steven, you can email them to ordinarywoman13, W-M-N, at yahoo.com, as you usually do, and I will get them to them on the air.
How many people are listening?
And I would also like to say, as the other host, hello to Mary 2321 and anyone else.
Girl, Mary. Mary, I don't know. You were the lucky one that got in the chat room. I don't know what happened after you got in for some reason. It's not acting right. But people still listen. They're actually listening on the air. And
how many? Shirley? How many people are listening?
I don't have my counter up because that's in my chat room too. Steven, I have a question here from Billy in Medford. He wants to know, what do you think of you getting politically involved? Because I mentioned earlier that you actually got to go to Obama's inaugural. He wants to know, what is youth involved in politics, and what did you come away from when you went to the inaugural?
All right. Well, I did have a chance to go into politics. Besides going to the inaugural, I was also shipped out one time. It was my senior year in high school. I went to simulate, like, high-ranking jobs in the government. There were, like, kids from all over the country there, you know, important people's kids. I got to meet some kids. One of the people I met there was the reason why I originally went to Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Florida to be a pilot, because I met him at that experience. And I was a secretary of the trade, right? Trade secretary. And, you know, you had these little groups. You had the president. You had vice president. All these people, generals, the press. Some people were the press. You know, everyone was simulating how it felt to get, like, a world crisis, you know, just around the clock working in a hotel. Where were we at? The Mafiat, the Lafayette, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But at the Obama inaugural, that was awesome as well. I almost bumped to him twice. I saw his motorcade go by two times. One time I was at Johnny Rockets, you know, enjoying a vanilla milkshake, boom, he went by. Another time they evacuated the Hilton Hotel so that they can bring him in. That's where we were staying, but they evacuated us, like, the night after the ball.
Mm-hmm.
It was awesome.
Yeah,
but
that's an amazing
about
experience to have, you know, you're such a young person, and to have that. What do you think motivated you to be so politically involved? Because I know that's one of the things that people talk about nowadays, that the youth just aren't interested, and I guess that's one of the things that everybody commented on, that Obama actually awoken a lot of these youth to vote and to be interested in politics again. What do you think caused that?
Just because I wanted a voice. What's the only way? You got to think of the rules of the game, the rules of the game to play life. If you want a voice, you have to go through these organizations that will give you a voice. So just all politics is about is sharing your opinion and your view of how you look at the world. You know, and try to convince other people of how your values should be, you know, what you have to say about it. And they'll listen to you. And you also need a college degree. That's also why I'm going to college. You get that piece of paper, that's just another thing. They say, hey, you should listen to me. You know, this is what
I have.
Do
you think there's a valid point when you're encouraged to go to college and it makes a huge difference?
Oh, yeah.
And what are some of the things that you felt you've gotten out of earning a college degree and going to school right now?
I don't know, just structure. Like, what else would I be doing? I don't want to work. I just gone to school all my life, 15
like,
years.
I don't want to work yet.
I'm a 15th grader. I'm trying to ride this out. I'll go to 20th grade if I have to get my PhD, you know? Right now I'm in 15th grade. Haven't worked a day in my life. Well, actually, I hustle, but I don't work. I'm an umpire. So I call those balls and strikes and strike those little kids out. So, all right, that's all I do. You know,
oh, man, don't get me going on you guys umpiring. Oh, my goodness, that's too funny.
Oh, no.
Me and Chris will
sit
him down. Send him back to the bench and
try
it. Chris is ruthless. I don't know, man.
I am.
He's too mean out there.
I'm like, no, you should
have sworn. Chris is ruthless. He is. I remember one time he needed a ride, so I got there to the ballpark a little earlier, and I'm watching, and I'm like, oh, my goodness. If I was the coach, I would be heated right now because Chris, I mean, and these were young kids. They were, what, like 11 or 12, Chris?
Yeah.
And Chris was no joke. He was like, that's my strike zone. Take it or leave it. I'm changing it for you or for anybody else.
Are you here to
so,
hit
yeah,
or you to walk, you know?
Now, I have to tell both of you, and let's see, I have an email here. who is this? Hold on. Gina from Gloucester wants to know, Chris, she says, it's refreshing to see youth nowadays that actually can speak a sentence without sounding stupid. And what do you think has inspired you to be well-read, as is obvious by the way you are talking, and what advice would you have for youth to be able to be more aware of their surroundings and what's going on in the world now?
I don't know. Really, like, if I get bored, I'll just look up something on the internet, and I'll just read it. Or if there's something in the news I hear, I'll look into it and research it to learn more about it sometimes.
Now, do you think? How do you think that's going to help you when it comes to your writing career?
To make more things real, because I like to write as if you're watching something that could be real, something realistic.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that being well-read helps you be able to know more about the world and be able to be just a better writer?
Yes.
Okay, now, Stephen, I have a question from you. Let me see, where is it? Roxanne wants to know. This is so funny. I'm getting all these emails because they can't get into the chat room. Roxanne wants to know, how old are you? Are you single and are you cute? I knew that was coming.
Oh, to our listeners, thank you. That just cracked me up 100%.
Okay,
you already
guys,
know.
This
they
is
call
not
me Biggie
the
Mac.
Red connection, okay?
What? No, it's all good. You tell her. She already know. They call me Ziggy Mac. Ain't that right, Chris?
Yep.
Ziggy Boy McAdoo. You know, I'm Mulatto Chocolate Brown Chocolate Swirl, and Chris is Tapioca.
Oh, my goodness. You guys are too funny.
What do we call you?
Steven,
wow.
Do you want to tell her your answer?
Sorry.
You got to give her an answer. How old are you?
No. Oh, I'm 21. I'm sorry. For, what is it, 4 months now, 5 months? I still haven't been to a bar yet, though. And I'm driving around on an expired license. I shouldn't even tell you. They think I'm going to be tracking me. But
watch out. Watch out.
Because as soon as I turned 21, my license expired. So I haven't gone to any bars, and I shouldn't be driving, but I got to get to school. You know, if I get pulled over, I'm like, sorry, Mr. Officer, I'm trying to get an education, because that's the only time I'm driving.
A likely excuse. Oh, man. So you're 21.
No.
Are you single, and are you cute? Obviously, you're going to say you're cute. You already did. But
yeah, but no, unfortunately, I'm not single, but they do call me Ziggy Mac. When I was, you should have seen me. When I had short hair, now I'm like a crazy wilderness man. Don't want to see me. I got a huge afro.
I swear
I'm
to goodness.
I'm growing it out like Jesus.
Yeah.
That's like a sign. Something's telling me to grow my hair. So I'm growing it out like
he
a prophet.
He needs a haircut. He seriously did. I mean, Chris had that long hair thing going, and he actually cut his a while ago. Actually, Chris donated it to Locks of Love, which I thought was a great, great thing for you to do. But Stephen over there has got the same thing going. It's so funny because Chris's brothers are always ragging on Stephen because they have that type of relationship, and they keep calling him a Chia pet because he's got this big fro. I'm like, Stephen, you need a haircut, child. What's going on with that?
Oh, don't tell me he's got those dreadlocks.
No, dreadlocks. No dreadlocks. Just big poofy afro. Actually, it doesn't look bad when he combs it out, but it's just getting a little bit. It's funny. It reminds me of back in the day because I'm going to date myself. When I was in eighth grade, that's how the boys wore all their hair. I mean, it didn't matter if you were black or white or Spanish. They all had the big, huge afros, and they thought they were just killing it with that style. So I guess it's coming back. Chris, lady, let's see. Ooh, I got one here. Who's this? Rosemary. Rosemary wants to know, what are your plans for the future, and where do you see yourself in 10 years?
In the future, I want to try to get through school, and then hopefully write. I'm going to start sending them to agencies in L.A., my scripts. After I write a couple more, I want to write, like, maybe two or three more on top of the three I already have and send them over to L.A., see what happens, and hopefully save up and go to graduate school over in L.A.
Now, one of the things that I've noticed about your stories, and just to add to what Rosemary was asking, you have a tendency to kill off characters that people become very attached to. I remember I read one of your screenplays for a short story called Teenagers, and I was very upset when you killed one of my favorite characters off, which I won't go into too much detail because I don't want to ruin it for you guys when you direct it, but where do you think you get that passion and that ability to be able to make a character so real that people are really upset when that character doesn't make it to the end of the movie? And why do you do that? Why do you not do the cookie cutter where, okay, this is the people's favorite character, he's going to march off in the sunset at the end?
That's why, pretty much. I don't know. I just thought it would happen in real life. This is probably what would happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be, oh, I'm going to get away.
Right, and now you always have a tendency in your stories to put average people in not-so-average situations. And where do these ideas come from? And, I mean, you have this, I can't even, it's almost like an Alfred Hitchcock type of thing, but not just with the horror thing. You have a tendency to be able to do it with, you know, bank robbery sceneries or talking about drugs or talking about, you know, violence in the schools. Just all, where do you get these just ideas that are so different and innovative from what we see nowadays?
I don't know, because I look at real situations and try to apply. And sometimes I do blow it up to, like, Hollywood style, where things are dramatic. But if it, that's more my comedic side.
Well, because those are the scripts that you write that are, you know, supposed to be over the top. Because, like you said, you're now you say you write comedies as well.
Yes.
Now, what type of comedies do you write? And if you could name maybe a director or a writer out there now that has anything similar to what you do when you write comedy.
I try to something like Judd Apatow, Seth Rogen. That's high humor, and maybe I go a little bit more over more top towards the raunchy side.
Mm-hmm.
Towards like Kevin Smith.
Right. And you really think there's a market for that?
Yes.
And now where do you think you get that there's a market for it and you see yourself as being successful with this genre of movie? I said, where do you see yourself that you think that your movies are going to be able to make money and that there's a demand for this type of genre?
If it happens, if I get that. Whereas, you know, I'm probably where I am now, same. Probably doing the same thing, writing, if I could keep continuing my career.
Right, so you really see that there's a demand out there for what you're writing?
Yes.
Now, Stephen and Chris, either one, if you both want to answer, what advice would you have for anybody that's listening that would be interested in getting into the field that you guys are getting into? I know everybody says, okay, go to school for that, but what are other things? Because obviously, Chris, you're going to school for that particular field. Stephen is not yet. He's still involved in it. So if I could get it, Chris, you first, what perspective can you give us as far as what you're doing to get to where you're going? And then I'll ask Stephen.
Well, like you said, write. If you're a writer, write stuff. Don't just go to school, like, write on the side. Don't write just the assignments. Like, write your own stories. Just continue to write. And, like, even, like, anything for film, you need, like, get a camera, film whatever. Film little stories.
Mm-hmm.
You write down a little story, film it, film how you want to see it, you know.
There's a lot about, okay, you're going to school for it, but you actually have to practice it. The hour, two or three that you spend in class is not going to be enough to be able to get to where you want to be.
Yes.
Now, Stephen, you're not going to school for anything to do with film. What advice would you have for somebody that isn't going to school or hasn't gone to school for this to get into the field? Is that something that they're interested in?
Well, well, what I did was I just, last year, 1 year ago, and probably some change, I opened up a YouTube channel. You know, Chris said, I got a camera, and I film stuff, how I wanted to see it, how I wanted to present it, and then I go to the editing booth and I do it myself. So opening up a YouTube channel definitely gets you into it. You know, you want to put videos out there. I remember when I was still making videos every day with 10 subscribers. I got 200 now, you know. I ain't big pimping yet, but I don't care. It's how I want to see it, and if you want to enjoy my life, come over and see. You know, that's just how I do it. If I want to film a skit, I'll film a skit. If I'm just my day driving in the car, you know, most times I'm just driving to school and talking about stuff. Like we were talking about at the beginning of the show, just our opinions on things. Like, we do get political, and, you know? Sounds good.
Now, you guys think that the internet has changed the face of the way movies are made now?
I don't know so much about how movies are made, but definitely how they're stolen and piracy and getting all those for free. Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
That's awesome now, because you're not the one making the movies and getting ripped off.
Oh, goodness.
Whatever, the government could just print money and just give it to Hollywood and be like, make movies, they're free, you know. And here's your money. They print it anyway, it's worth those pieces of paper.
Oh, yeah. I have an email here. Betty says, number one, she says, I want to tell our guest that it's amazing and refreshing to hear two such young men that are actually have goals in life and are going after their dreams. And her question is, do you guys think that in order to be in that industry, do you have to go to Hollywood, or is it something that can be done here with all the noise and buzz about Hollywood East?
I would say, yeah, you would have to go to Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. And why is that?
Most of the time they send people from Hollywood to here.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's all this talk about all these movies that are coming here, and you actually, Chris, if you can share with our listeners, you actually got the opportunity to work on a movie this summer?
What happened?
You actually got the opportunity?
Oh, as an extra, yes.
And what did you do? How was that experience?
Pretty much just standing around and watching celebrities make a movie.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of movie was it?
It was a comedy with Adam Sandler.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have to ask you, did you actually get to talk to the stars? Did you get to see them, or is it just basically you in one corner waiting to be moved around and told where to go?
Mainly it was me moving around, just having to do something. Like, they all sit here. And just say, yeah, they take. They'll tell you, like, jump in here.
Right.
Wow.
So how about the director? Did you get to see how the director worked? Did you learn anything from how their style was?
They were very relaxed. They were, like, mm-hmm. they were just having fun filming stuff.
So that, is that the kind of environment that you see yourself working in?
Like sometimes for comedies,
mm-hmm.
but still, you know, Issa, I would do it a little bit more serious.
Yeah.
Now where did they do this comedy?
Chris?
Yes?
Where did they film the movie?
In Exeter, right?
In Exeter,
no, Essex,
yeah.
Essex. Yeah.
So now this got to be an interesting concept to you, because you actually got the opportunity to see what a Hollywood production was like and give you ideas of what you want to do or not to do as a director. So it was a great exposure for you from the other angle, obviously not the acting angle, but for you to be able to see what the directors did, the lighting and all that stuff. Now, Chris, do you want to give our listeners your YouTube account number, name, where they can find you, if they can get more information about you guys on the internet?
YouTube.com/ Caster Troy.
Caster Troy. And they can see your videos. Now, what are some of the videos that they'll run into when they go to your channel? Chris?
What?
What are some of the channels that, what are some of the videos that they'll run into when they're on your channel?
Just me talking. Maybe a couple of made things.
Oh, being belligerent. Yeah.
Steven, how about you? Where can they see you on YouTube?
Same thing, youtube.com, and it's /, not /. I don't know why people say /. It is /.
I'm sorry, sir.
The letter Z. The word is. And you know I am right. WRIT, though. That's where I'm at.
All right. So, guys, thank you so much for being on the show. I can't believe we're almost out of time. So, again, for our listeners, if you want to catch some of Stephen Wright and Christopher Arajita Alejandro's videos, you can go to YouTube and Google Caster Troy or Z is Right and check out some of their rantings and ravings. You can check out Monkey Man up there, too. They have the comedy. Again, some of this stuff is not for the kids. It's not PG. So you might want to. It's definitely adult humor. So just keep that in mind. Thank you so much for being on the show, guys. We're looking forward to hearing from you in the coming year. Tell us any projects you got coming up in the next few months.
Probably just writing. Maybe we'll get together over this weekend.
We should call James up and just film something.
Yeah, we'll probably film something.
Sounds good. So make sure you guys give us a call. Let us know what's going on. We can have you back on the show. Thank you so much for being with us, and I will talk to you guys later. Have a great weekend and a happy Christmas.
Thank you. All right, thanks for having us.
You're welcome. Talk to you. Oh, before you guys go, any shout-outs, any hellos to your fans and friends out there?
I'm just going to say hello, y'all.
Steven, any shout-outs to anybody?
Oh, I disconnected. Move.
Oh, I hear you, Steven. You're still there. Oh, he's gone. All right, thanks anyway, guys. We'll see you later and have a great holiday. Man, how was that? Oh, my goodness. The connection kept coming in and out. It was so, I don't know.
What is going on? I've been watching. I want to give a shout-out to all those that are in the chat room. Bob, JJ, 3421, Mary.
Bob.
23. Mary,
you're regular.
Two,
Richard.
One.
Oh, Richard finally made it in.
Richard
came in and goes, I can't get in. I don't know what's going on. You guys were actually able to get into the chat room. Unfortunately, there's a few of you that didn't. I'm so sorry that you didn't get in. But, hey, it was all good. You got to listen to the show. And, yeah, it was great. Interesting young men. Definitely very cutting edge. Definitely very edgy. And, like I said, it's definitely not PG stuff for your kids to be watching. They're very funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's adult humor. They tackle very, very touchy subjects. Some of the language can be very vulgar. But they're trying to get their point across. In our show, we are about extraordinary people. It doesn't necessarily have to be Mother Teresa. You know, there are extraordinary people that have potty mouths, and that's okay because they have their opinions to express, and they bring some value to the table. It's not just random rantings and ravings that are vulgar. They're actually making valid points.
Right.
And that's the great thing about America, that we have the ability to express our values and our opinions, whether we agree with them or not. And that's the great thing about it. We can agree to disagree, and that's a cool thing. So, Mountain Man, this is so great. We finally got the show through and everything, and I'm just so excited about Christmas Eve tomorrow. Santa Claus is going to be coming, so I'm really excited. Now, Friday, we're going to be having a family show. We're actually going to be having some of my family members going to share some of our thoughts about Christmas and the holidays and some of the traditions that we do.
Really?
And yes. Yes,
you're
going to
have
actually,
the family on the show?
Yes. Yes, we are. We're going to have the family on the show. So that'll be a great treat. They actually were trying to talk me into doing a midnight show tomorrow.
What? No. You expect that being to be up at midnight to do a show?
Well, that's because we all are. We have this tradition that we actually sing Happy Birthday to Jesus at midnight, and then we lay him under the tree or in the manger or wherever we happen to have poor baby Jesus. And, we open our gifts. We open our gifts on Christmas Eve.
Well,
technically, it's Christmas Day because it's after midnight. But
because we only have a couple of minutes left here.
Yes.
If you really want to do that, the co-host would be up for it if need be.
Well, that's good to know. I'll let you know once I talk to my family and get the general consensus. But definitely Christmas Day, we will be here at 7 o'clock for an hour. And, again, we're basically going to do just a lot of quick family members sharing their best Christmas memories and their thoughts and ideas about Christmas and the holidays and what it really means to them. And I have to tell you, I'm just so excited. Like I said, this is 3 months we've been on the air. And it just keeps growing, our listenership. Today we had over 800 people listening, which is huge for me because it's huge. And that's a lot of people. I know people are like, well, you know, no. We've been here 3 months, no budget whatsoever, word of mouth, mostly Facebook, that kind of stuff. So we're really excited that our
relationship
is going. 90
seconds here.
90 seconds. See, you got the lady in your ear. So for all our listeners, thank you so much for being here. We'll let you know if we're going to be on the air tomorrow. It's going to be a midnight special. And remember, Friday, 7 p.m., we'll be here for our Christmas show. So remember, do not let anybody ever, 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 ever steal your dreams away because they're your dreams and only you can make them. And I think we're going to go out with I Want to Hear Feel by Laz and Kat.
We got 60 seconds, and I was going to pick All Your Love. Is what I was
well, you
think.
Go for it. There you go. All your love. Here you go. Enjoy it and have a great day, guys. See you on
All right.
Christmas.
Oh,